Dear Mr. President, Excellencies, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, it's with great pleasure that I address you today in this important parliamentary session in the Fifth World Science Forum. It's the third time that I participate in this August assembly. As in previous years, this has been a highly stimulating event so far, and I would like to take the occasion to say thank you to Mr. Palinkas and the Hungarian National Academy of Science for the wonderful job you do every 2 years, and it's really a wonderful, impressive event. Before I go into detail, please let me clarify. While I give this presentation as chair of the Committee of Education, Research and Technology Assessment of the German Bundestag, I want to be understood as well as being member of the Executive Board of the German UNESCO Commission. I underline this because in 2011 marks the 60th anniversary of Germany joining UNESCO, one of the first UN organizations that my country has joined after the Second World War. Multilateral cooperation in education and science have always been very important for my country and continues to be so. In this year, Germany has cooperated especially closely with UNESCO. Our cooperation shows that we clearly support the ambitious reform agenda of Director General Irina Bokova, and UNESCO, we think, is more necessary than ever and needs more support than ever. 2 weeks ago, the UNESCO General Conference has accepted Palestine as a new member state. As a consequence of this decision, UNESCO currently seems to get into a very difficult financial situation. And I call upon all of us to continue working with and through UNESCO as a global platform for successful multilateral cooperation in education, science, and culture. And I'm happy to let you know that my parliament next week, after finishing the budget decision, we will agree to ongoing funding UNESCO. There's no doubt about it. Ladies and gentlemen, our world is globalized. Only 15 years ago, we have debated whether this is to the benefit or the detriment of the world at large. Today, we recognize that globalization is a fact. While we are worried about large and increasing social imbalance and injustice in many countries, we also have to acknowledge the enormous social and human benefits that globalization has brought to many countries. Globalization has lifted hundreds of millions out of poverty, for example, in China or India, increasing opportunities for a life and dignity. Countries with huge populations such as China, India, South Africa, and Brazil today are reshaping the world. We almost have forgotten that South Korea, Taiwan, or Singapore have been developing countries in the 1960s. All these countries started their fast economic growth based on cheap labor as suppliers for industrial goods. But these countries are getting beyond cheap labor and build knowledge society. Education, science and technology and innovation become very important for all these countries in transition as strategy for quality economies. This has been the key message of the UNESCO Science Report 2010. I do not want to repeat facts all of you know well, for example, that China will soon have the highest number of the researchers worldwide and that China is massively improving the quality of its research system, or that India is about to create 30 new universities. Instead, I have to emphasize one thing as clearly as possible. These new developments prove that science, research, technology, and innovation are not European or American. Whoever believed this has been proven wrong empirically. Let us remember, science has not even been invented in Europe. We only have to recall the mathematicians of Egypt and Mesopotamia or the astronomers of India more than 2,000 years ago. And it has been the Arabs who have conserved the heritage of Greek science across the Middle Ages. Today, science is just as much Asian as it's European. Science is really global. The scientific quest is universal, understood as a thorough and systematic enterprise that strives for knowledge as testable explanations and predictions. All human beings have a desire for knowledge, to know more, to know better. And indeed, the desire to know more and to know better goes hand in hand with questioning traditional beliefs and established authority. It's only a short step from there to stand up to established authority. There is a reason why academic freedom is called freedom. Academic freedom has been quashed for years and decades in many Arab countries, just as political freedom we see it in the spring now. We hope that countries with a strong academic tradition, such as Tunisia and Egypt, will become even stronger partners in global science in the future, now that political freedom and academic freedom have returned. What are the threats of academic freedom? I want to recall that in Germany, academic freedom has a very high constitutional rank. Therefore, we take this issue very serious. The reason why Germans value academic freedom so much is the same reason for all serious values. We have made horrible experiences in the absence of freedom in the past. Scientific research during the Nazi regime was an ideological instrument for barbarous experimentation and disrespect of human life and dignity. Currently, in parts of the world, many threats to academic freedom obviously are due to government oppression, often very explicit and blunt. Even more often, there may be implicit censorship from governments through institutional pressure. There might be also cultural or religious pressure. In this context, let me point out to one very specific limitation of academic freedom: the freedom of girls and women to participate in education and knowledge. And we must see the same and equal rights and equal participation of women as a condition for economic growth, for welfare, and for scientific progress. I thank UNESCO for all its effort in that regard, but of course we have to do much more for equality and participation of women. We have to create new incentives, new regulation, and we have to change the mindsets of men and women in all countries around the world. At the same time, and this is what I would like to focus on the rest of my intervention, there are also de facto limitations to academic freedom through globalized science. Once we accept that science today is a globalized system, we need to ask how it's organized. The question was not asked enough in the past because, especially in Europe and America, we have not thought seriously enough about globalized science. In the past, we have organized science according to our needs. We did this implicitly without realizing or admitting that these are our needs. But of course, until today, we do measure scientific quality and scientific excellence according to parameters that are defined in Europe and America. In a truly globalized science system, this is no more acceptable. We have to change this situation. It's okay to consider a molecular biologist in Central Africa as excellent if he publishes in Nature. But it is not okay to ignore a researcher who helps to define efficient housing schemes for the local population because it doesn't publish in an SCI journal. And it is important to demand academic freedom for scientists in developing countries in the sense of being free from government intervention and regulation. But this is as important to demand academic freedom in the sense of not being restricted to Western research priorities. We have to admit that the global science system de facto regulates and restricts academic freedom, especially in developing countries, because the researchers there depend on funding often coming from Europe or America, and because the researchers there need to publish in SCI journals set up in Europe or America. This problem is not of principle or theory. We do not just demand academic freedom for its own sake. The problem is that we need functioning, efficient science systems everywhere to address the dramatic global challenges of today. Climate change, hunger, migration, security, desertification, water scarcity, lack of quality education, the list is long and could be continued. We need to address these enormous global challenges. We need to address them where they occur, in Africa and the Arabic states, in Latin America and Asia. Intervention and development aid from the USA, Europe or China will not substantially help Africa or other regions to solve their problems. These countries themselves need more research capacity. They also need research capacity which is different from a 19th century university. The global challenges are very complex, interdependent, and systemic. In order to address them, we need entirely new forms of knowledge creation involving many different scientific disciplines. In addition, some of these challenges are actually quite well understood. Here the question is more about adequate implementation or of translation of scientific knowledge into practice. Many challenges need to be addressed through involving stakeholders into the very scientific process, or through combining science with traditional knowledge, or through cooperating with society. Germany has started to react to the globalization of science. What did we do? Taking into account that German research has been well connected internationally for decades already, the question is one of a better strategy. In 2008, internationalization strategy of science and research has been formulated. Four objectives have been defined: strengthening cooperation with global leaders, exploiting innovation potentials at the company level, intensifying cooperation with developing countries, and mastering global challenges. A particularly relevant new dimension is to strategically address cooperation with developing countries. One continent where this is currently done in an exemplary manner is Africa. Currently, Germany supports Ethiopia in reforming its university system. We are in close contact with the African Union of the Pan-African University, and we help to establish two science service centers for climate change and adaptive land use, one in Southern Africa, one in Western Africa. Especially as regards Africa, there are also clear synergies with the UNESCO and its science policy work in Africa, synergies that need to be exploited far better still. Ladies and gentlemen, what's the role of parliaments in this context? I think we need to recall the ethical dimension of global cooperation in education and science. It is reasonable to clearly articulate our own interests. Only if we are clear about what we want, we can do things properly. But clearly articulating one's own interest is only the start. To clearly articulate our global responsibilities is the logical next step, especially to support sustainable development, human rights, and freedom. In effect, in a globalized society, articulating our self-interests and our global responsibilities is just a different way of speaking about short-term and long-term self-interests. And for free elected parliaments, they are the ideal place to remind governments of the long-term self-interest. And in the context of what we have been talking about, this means if developing countries establish research capacity which truly helps them, this will in the long term truly help us all. Thank you very much for your attention.